Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Brad.
Hey, it's James.
We decided to start a podcast about subjects that spark conversations between us.
We're not professionals and we don't claim to be, but we will look to get some guests on each week who can shed some light on these areas.
Ultimately, we wanted to have an open conversation and hear the thoughts of everyone else about these subjects.
And hopefully you guys can learn as we do.
This is How Little We Know.
Welcome back to How Little We Know. This is episode 3 with James.
And Brad, hello.
What's happening? So, slight change of scenery today. We are in my front room. Entail are having their Christmas party. But that did not stop us. We will not be stifled on our mission to learn something more. So we are in my house. Now, before we go on, I think we're just going to have to say a massive thank you, because we found out the other day that our first 2 episodes have been downloaded 100,000 times, which is insane, isn't it?
Mental. Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. We hope you've been enjoying them. It's ridiculous. We've said this before. We didn't expect that. So it's a very nice surprise. Cheers, guys. We've got another episode that hopefully you guys are going to love today. We've got a special guest on. A lovely man. His name is Chris Lewis, and he's the author of best-selling book Too Fast to Think, and it's about how to reclaim your creativity in a hyper-connected work culture. And a lot of the subjects he speaks about in this book are very relevant to the topics we've covered in the past few podcasts. And it's also very interesting to get his take on social media. So yes, we're looking forward to having him on. However, he is squeezing us in whilst he's in the lounge at London Heathrow whilst he's on his way to California. So very appreciative, and we look forward to speaking to him.
Now, whilst we try and get him on the line, I reckon I'm just going to read out a couple of tweets, because we keep on saying we'll read out your tweets. And I realised that last week when we had Jack Maynard on, we didn't.
Sorry.
But yeah, sorry. But since then, I've been looking through them. So yeah, make sure you send us a tweet to @HowLittleWeKnow. Now, I've got 3 tweets here. First one is from Courtney H, and she said, "Great episode. For me, watching YouTube started with checking out new music videos, and now it's become a daily routine to watch videos of my favourite celebrities, Labradors and Golden Retrievers,"
good
which
choice.
Is great. "But she also says, I even tried learning guitar. The content is never ending, but I love it." So that's a good little input there. We've also got Vintage_Brad, who said, "Loving the podcast so far. It's really made me view social media in a different way," which is great, because mm-hmm. that's the whole kind of point of the podcast, to get a conversation going and to make people think about it. And the last one, there were thousands, by the way, so I'm just picking a couple here. This is from Rachel, and she says she's rated it, which is great. "Please continue to rate the podcast, because we actually charted number 3, which was amazing. That's because of you guys rating it." She also says, "I'm really loving these. Can't wait for more." So thank you very much for all the positive tweets. We're yet to have a troll.
Oh, well, you're inviting him in there, James.
Trolls are welcome too, as long as you let us know why. We can maybe get a troll on at some point.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Anyway, I reckon it's time for us to get Chris on the line. Let's do it.
We've managed to catch him just before he gets on his flight to California. Very appreciative of him coming on the podcast. It's Chris Lewis. How are you doing, Chris?
Hi, Brad. Hi, James. How are you?
We're good, thanks, mate. This is quite a technological advancement for us to speak to you when you're in an airport lounge and we're in my flat. So I feel like technology has served us well today.
I know.
Yeah, we can make it happen.
We're making it happen. It's going on. Like I said, we're very appreciative of you coming on, and obviously... I started reading Too Fast to Think a little while ago, and I put James onto it, and it's been a very interesting read and a very insightful read, and it's very interesting to hear your take on how social media is affecting the ability for people to carve out space in their own life. And I think we just wanted to kind of chat to you and get your opinion on it, and hopefully spread the message that is within the book to our demographic and the people that are listening in, that is predominantly a younger generation.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. That's very generous of you to say those nice things about Too Fast to Think. I was surprised how it seemed to be so popular, and it went straight into the bestsellers list, and it continues to attract a lot of interest. Because it has quite profound effects. It seems like quite a simple technology, social media, but it does have some quite serious knock-on effects.
For those listening, some of our fans probably haven't heard of you, Chris. So it's kind of in a nutshell, what do you hope to achieve from the book? Like, what's it about, just for the audience? I know Brad touched on it briefly there, but from your perspective, what do you hope to achieve with the book?
Well, I've built a company around the world. I'm a former creative, I'm a journalist by training, and I've been involved in digital and social media for the last 10 years, and I've been lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time and create a company which has employed a lot of people. And I've seen a lot of people get very interested in social media, but sometimes it happens at the expense of their creativity and their well-being. And there are lots of really good things that can come out of social media, and some of the new tools that are coming out are amazing, but we also have to be careful about any of the negative effects that they can have.
Definitely. Of course, yeah. That kind of, I don't know if you were following the news last week, but the former Facebook executive, a former Facebook executive has come out saying that he's banned his own children from using Facebook because he says that social media is ripping society apart. Would you agree with that? Do you think that social media is at a point now that is actually detrimental to society as a whole?
Well, I think it's a bit like fire. Fire is a good servant, but it's an evil master. Fire is great if it heats your house and cooks your food, but not very good if it burns your house down. And so it should be there as a servant and not a master to your life. A lot of people, their social media is their life. And we have to remember that our life is about our values and who we are. It's not just about what we do. And so when we come to look at what makes people successful in the long term and happy, it's not just about having a to-do list. It's about having a to-be list. Our lives are about our values, not just what we do.
Well, it's funny you say that. A lot of the issues we touch upon and some of the things that we spoke about in earlier episodes was how social media could potentially affect the morality of younger generations and act as almost a third parent, we've seen it, and because of it's coming at such an impressionable age for so many children and they're growing up with it, would you say that it is skewing people's moralities and how they go about the rest of their life?
Well, I think it might be skewing some of their perceptions, because it's very easy to get depressed with seeing some of the news on social media. Often news has quite a bad focus, and there's a lot of really good stuff happening out there that you don't always see. And social media stress affects women a lot more than men. Women are much more empathetic, and they're much more aware of stress in the lives of their friends. Danica Lowe wrote a really interesting piece in Glamour magazine a little while ago that four out of every five beauty tweets from women about themselves was negative, and women are twice as likely to say something negative about themselves on social media. So it's very important to recognize that it's not indicative of life in general. Social media is an unusual place where sometimes people say things and do things which they wouldn't normally do if you could identify them.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Would you say that social media kind of is a place that people, as Brad was saying, like perhaps don't necessarily draw on their morals as such, but I find a lot, you know, that you get the term like keyboard warriors and things, but do you think that there's a genuine notion that people don't view social media as being perhaps as serious as real life? Do you think that people presume that once they tweet something, they can almost like disconnect from it. They think, oh, it's not actually real. Do you think that that is a genuine thing, that people don't really have that association between online communication and real life?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very astute observation, because the social media surrounds us with communication, but not necessarily conversation. Mm-hmm. And this is quite an important thing, because without conversation, we can't resolve emotional problems, and we can't do things that we do in life, like negotiate, if we don't have a conversation. Yeah. So sometimes we think that we're really engaging with people, but we're just communicating with them. We're not conversing with them. And that's different. That's different, because people's behavior is generally, amongst generations, is as moral as the next generation. Yeah. Sometimes there are perceptions that people are less moral. And in my experience, people have got pretty much the same moral standards as they've always had, except sometimes it can appear to be a harsher world. So, for instance, a lot of people hear a lot of bad things that are going on in the world, but news is often about bad things. Really good things going on doesn't make news.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
It's quite a complex question. But news is always the psychology of the unexpected. You know, dog bites man is not a story, but man bites dog is a story. So when you see so much news, I mean, these days, when you add up social media and email and all of the news feeds that there are out there, people are getting interrupted on average around about every 6 minutes. Mm. And so you don't tend to interrupt people with news that poverty is in retreat, and that there are less people dying through violence than ever before, and there are greater equality on the planet. There's a lot of really good things happening, but you don't interrupt people to tell them that.
Mm. I don't know how old you are, Chris, but I presume that you're the generation probably older than us.
Very, very, very old. Oh,
so with that in mind, how has it been for you to kind of see that transition? So even Brad and I, I'm 24, Brad's 22.
22, yeah.
And we, even us, we kind of feel like we're sort of, I don't know, out of the know with social media kind of etiquette in some ways. You know, there's things that happen that we just don't understand. And we feel that we were just on the cusp of that kind of massive social media boom. But for you, really kind of being there before Twitter and Instagram, how has it been for you to see that transition? So you were just saying there, the amount of emails that people are answering, whatever it was, every 6 minutes or something. How has that been for you to adapt into a new world of social media that wasn't there before?
Well, I think people were a lot less stressed before, partly because they weren't interrupted. When you interrupt somebody, you immediately bounce them back into their left brain. And the left-hand side of their brain does all of the compare, contrast, and analyze. It analyzes, divides, and puts a comparison against everything. And so when you do that, you train yourself to spot difference and to separate people and to divide them. But so much of our joy and enthusiasm and creativity comes from joining things up and bringing people together with a right brain process, which is imagination, trust, and love. And that's what unifies people in a common vision and cause. So you can sometimes see a lot more division now and a lot more people calling each other out for being different. And when you're a teenager, for instance, it's painful to be different. It's hard to be different. And yet without diversity, you can't have any form of creativity. Diversity is so important to us, because if we're all the same, the world would be really dull.
Do you not feel that social media, though, has enabled people, you know, teenagers, to kind of appreciate diversity, and people are brought together from across the world, regardless of race and religion? Do you not think that our younger kind of generations are a lot higher educated perhaps than they were 40 years ago due to social media being there?
I think there's a lot more communication, definitely. But one of the questions we should ask ourselves, because when social media arrived, it was a place where 1,000 flowers could bloom. Mm-hmm. The idea was that you could share any form of idea, and the more diverse, the better. But often teenagers that have an independent and unique and creative view of the world can find themselves in a flame war with a whole bunch of people who will cut down the tallest poppy. And and so sometimes we have to be aware of that process going on, because if you really come up with something original and genuinely creative, you can find yourself walking into a lot of resistance on social media because you're dealing with kind of a normalized behavior.
I don't know how much I kind of agree with what James is saying. I think that is very relevant in that it can stifle creativity because of the constant interruption. I do agree with that. But I almost feel like if, as a creative going onto a platform where you're seeing so much diversity and so many other creatives being celebrated, because I do think social media does that. It does celebrate a lot of diverse creativity. It can be quite an inspiring place at times.
I met Brad on social media, yeah. for example. So the Vamps wouldn't be a thing if it wasn't for social media. Could someone argue that you're being too negative on your view on social media?
Yeah, you could do. I think I was really relating that in the context of women on social media, because sometimes there is one idea of what beautiful is, and so if there's a diverse view of beautiful, sometimes we can be measuring everybody against one single standard, and there are so many different types of beauty out there in women. And when they compare themselves all against one single norm, sometimes that can create a great deal of stress with them. That's the point I was making.
Right. I suppose
it's very
actually
relevant. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a statistic actually. Because I mean, a lot of. I mean, obviously we're guys, so I don't really like to speak on behalf of females. But I know that a lot of our fans look on Instagram as being the most kind of, I guess, inspirational platform of social media. And there's a statistic here from a Guardian article in March that was saying Instagram has the most negative impact on young people's mental well-being. And they did a survey, and 1,500 14 to 24-year-olds found that the health groups accused it of deepening young people's feelings of inadequacy and anxiety. So I think there are kind of statistics out there that are kind of backing up what you're saying there. With that in mind, carry on, Chris.
No, sorry. I think Dove ran a campaign called Speak Beautiful, which was encouraging women to realize that the role that online words play in impacting confidence and self-esteem. And you're right, men can't talk about these things on behalf of women. But some of the surveys and evidence is out there suggesting that sometimes these things can be, of course, a source of stress.
I'm sorry, Chris, I don't know much about your person, but do you have a daughter or children?
Yes, I actually have two daughters, and they're massive Vamps fans, and they went they went all the way to LA to meet you. And
wow.
Their mother Joe went with them. And they met you, and I tell you, not only were my daughters so impressed, but my wife was absolutely.
Well, that's
very much.
So I know that a lot of what you kind of promote is that switching off from social media. How do you regulate the amount of time that your daughters spend on social media? / do you regulate them? Is that something you think about?
Yeah, but one of the things that I'm very keen on is that they don't take iPhones into their bedroom when they're trying to sleep, because sometimes the light from those older phones can offset the REM sleep. So it can keep them awake, and that has a sort of physical effect. But they don't have social media in their bedrooms after dark. And but generally speaking, as a parent, you've got to understand that it's a different environment, and you also need to make sure you're not too didactic about telling them what to do all the time, because that often has the opposite effect.
One of the biggest things, I think the reason I started reading your book was because, so we are songwriters in the band, and as I do completely agree with a lot of the things you say in the book, which is about, as a, if you're looking to create, if you're looking to kind of draw on any influence or inspiration, you need to do it from a place of having space. And I know one of the things you say in the book is creativity is a product of time wasted, which I love. And for a generation that has grown up with iPhones in their hands, who maybe don't know the benefit of having space, like James said earlier, we were on the cusp, and we didn't grow up having Twitter and Instagram at the basically attached to your hand. How important, like, for these people and these children who don't know maybe how important having space is, what would you say to them?
It's just to say that all creativity is within you, and so often the things that are most powerful to us are imagination. I think it was the Queen of Hearts in Alice in Wonderland said to Alice, "I want you, when I was your age, I used to think of six impossible things before breakfast." And it's our imagination which brings out our genius. And if we create the space for that to come out, we should trust ourselves and rely upon the fact that it will come out. But if we surround ourselves with noise, it makes it much harder.
There's another thing from your book. Well, I went on your book's got a Twitter page. For those, I'm sure we have mentioned, but the book's called Too Fast to Think. And I liked this quote, and it was, if you ask a class of 4-year-olds who is an artist and who's creative, most people will put their hands up. But if you ask them at the age of 14, only one or two will raise their hands. Is there genuinely scientific proof that suggests that this is a real thing, that as people get older and the more time spent on social media, does that inhibit their willingness to participate? Is that a real thing, or is that just something that you believe in?
I think this is something that was in Too Fast to Think. The foreword was written by Sir Ken Robinson, who's a really interesting educationist. He's got lots of things online on YouTube, particularly his video about changing paradigms of education. And he says that we're too prescriptive in the way that we educate people, because we teach them to analyze everything. We teach them to compare and contrast and analyze and notice difference, when in reality, in the future, so much of our success and potential comes from how creative and how original and how much imagination we have. And so many of people listening to this may feel that there are people in their class at school or at university who are more intelligent than they are, or ranked higher than they mm-hmm. are, or somehow score more highly. But educating people by their year of birth is a bit like choosing a date of manufacture. You know, everybody operates at a different pace, and sometimes people get so much better as they get older. But that it's not a straight line. And so I'm a great believer that if you really want to reach your potential, you have to be able to dream, and to do that, you have to find the time to switch off and let your imagination guide you.
I think that's a fantastic place to finish up, Chris. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. We'd love to have you on moving forward as well, if you'd like to come back and have a chat with us at another.
Well, I wanted to say congratulations on your awards.
And thank you.
My girls were thrilled to meet you, and you know, in terms, if you ever worried about the morals of young people, I think what the example you set in terms of your politeness and your hard work and your approach, it's just exceptional. So congratulations.
Oh, that's very kind.
Thanks very much, Chris. Thanks for coming on. And we hope that your flight to LA is great. And we'd definitely love to do some more with you in the future. But thanks again, Chris.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
To anyone listening, make sure you go out and have a look at Too Fast to Think. It's a brilliant book. I'd highly recommend it. Thanks again, Chris.
Cheers.
Thanks, bye.
That was Chris there. Absolutely awesome guest. Please do check out his book, Too Fast to Think. Brad, it's one of your favourites, isn't it?
It's one of my favourites. Yeah, it's really good. And as you can hear from what he was saying, he's a very insightful man. And I think it's he speaks about creating space. And I think it's something that everyone can definitely have a bit of in their life. But if you enjoyed it, like James said, make sure to tweet us in, let us know if you agree, if you disagree with any of the things that Chris said. We'd love to hear your opinions and thoughts. And now Chris is on his plane to LA. We're going to have a little...
We're just going to slag him off. Yeah. Can you imagine? No, not at all. The Twitter handle is at How Little We Know. Isn't Chris's Twitter something strange?
It's,
like
his actual personal Twitter is at Large Burrito.
Take it as you will. I mean, there's nothing wrong with burritos, but his book does have a Twitter, and I think it's at Too Fast to Think. I think whatever it is, we'll make sure that we'll tweet this.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think we've had a little bit of time to mull over what Chris has said there. And one thing that I think still sticks out for us is his thoughts on diversity on social media and the effect social media has on one's ability to be themselves online. Yeah,
and like the biggest thing that stuck out for me was how his perception of social media was that it's not a very accepting place. And I do think there's something in that. Like, obviously, the first time we put covers out, and anyone who dares to put a true perception of themselves out, you're putting it up with the knowledge that you're going to get trolls, I believe they're called. But the haters and people who feel the need to give you their opinion, whether it's good or bad. And I think that's probably what he was getting at. When he talks about people being scared to put themselves out there, and maybe that space not being accepting of diversity and people who are different. But I don't know whether I massively agree with it, because I think as much as there is trolls, I think people are very aware of them, and I think that social media is a place that celebrates difference and diversity and music nowadays, and you see artists come through who are just so different and they build their whole career off it.
I completely agree. I think he's got something, he's onto something with speaking about female mental health. I think that is a genuine concern. Instagram, yeah. The perfect, you know, we did on offer for those who haven't listened to our previous episodes, our first episode of the podcast, we chatted a little bit about expectation versus reality, and that kind of focused on Instagram and like the idealistic, inverted commas, perfect goals life. So I think that there is something very much apparent there. I'm not sure though, as Brad, as you were saying, whether the internet, I think for me, there's a place for everyone on the internet. Mm-hmm. For example, a lot of people, like I've got a very, very close friend who has who's gay, and he's come out on social media, but not to his parents and the people that he knows around him, his friends. I hate saying in real life, because for some people, social media is real life, but the people he physically sees around him, he is not openly gay with them, but on social media he is.
Do you think that's good that he feels confident enough on social media to, that's obviously a very big moment for someone in their life. Is it good that he feels more confident and more open and able to do that on social media, or is that a negative thing? Should he feel like he can do that in his real life before he puts on social media?
I think that obviously it would be amazing if every person could be able to do that in real life. I think the reality is though, social media offers an outlet for people to see other people that are similar to them. So if you go on the internet and Google something, say you and I wanted to find someone that was into, I mean, the Kooks or something, we could go on a Kooks website and all those people would like the Kooks, and we'd be like, we have a connection. I think in real life, we've touched on this in the past, it's quite difficult to go up to people in the street and say, I like this, do you like that? Or and I think that the internet is a massive ocean of fish, and sometimes people like me that grew up in Dorset, you know, it's a small pond, and I think there are people on the internet where you can connect with where you wouldn't have a chance if there wasn't social media.
Yeah, and I think you've got the ability of knowing, you'd put on your bio on Twitter or Facebook your interests, and people instantly connect over that, and there's similarities, and that's probably the biggest thing, isn't it? You're instantly put into a world of people. Like, it's not the first question you'd ask someone when you meet them, but social media, because of the lack of having to do the pleasantries, you can get straight into the crux of like, are you into this sort of thing? And then you can kind of build a relationship without having the pleasantries at the beginning, and whether people think that's more representative of a real, truer relationship with someone. It's something we've spoke about before. I don't know. It's obviously different from person to person.
Yeah, I find it interesting. I was just thinking then, as you were saying that for many people, the internet offers confidence, regardless of the fact that statistically social media has had a negative effect on people's mental health. It's quite an interesting thing, isn't it? Perhaps, do you think that in the earlier stages of people getting into social media, they see it as... Do you think that someone's perception of social media changes the longer they use it? So when you go into social media, when you first put up your stuff on Instagram, you're like, oh, there's filters.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and like, you put the picture up, great, I'm confident because I'm putting that on there and that's great. But then as you use it for longer, I wonder whether there's a bit of a transition in your mind where it starts getting, you know, it plays into your insecurities and inadequacies. As I was saying, that statistic from The Guardian to Chris before, like, you know, there's proof that that happens.
Mm.
And I just wonder whether people get into social media as an outlet to kind of embrace themselves. But then as time goes on, as Joe, our manager, was just saying, there are trials on stuff. I wonder if the longer time spent on social media, the worse it gets. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Short bursts might be okay, but if you immerse yourself in it for months and months and years, I wonder whether that's when it happens.
Well, it's very... You said something to me the other day that was very interesting. I think it becomes a method of, like, a moment... Oh, there's a car alarm going off.
Is it your car?
I hope not. There's people who we've spoke to who the three likes that they get on their Instagram post or however many likes they get will be the perk of their day. They could be having a bad day and then they'll rely on getting a comment or a like on a photo for their moment of happiness through the day. And I think that's where it becomes a crutch rather than an outlet, rather than I'm going to do this for a small proportion of my day as like I'm just going to show people what I'm doing. It becomes like I need this because it becomes an addiction. It becomes like I need to have this gratification every day.
I'd love to. I should have researched this, but whether social media is addictive, like there must be a... I'm gonna have a little Google. Wait, but I think getting people like Chris on is really interesting because, like, for us, we were saying before we started recording that we speak to people our age in our environment, in our demographic, in our generation about this all the time, and that's what we've done from the... You know, we had like Jack Maynard on last time, and it's so interesting to see someone else from a different age bracket to see his perception, because I was thinking how he spoke was so eloquent and stuff and great. I was thinking that I don't know whether for him it's an easier thing to just view social media as, and is that because we didn't really ask him, did we, if he uses social media, but do you reckon that he's speaking almost like poetically about it because he's outside looking in as opposed to being in it?
I think it goes back to his book. I think the reason that he can speak so eloquently about it is because he's given himself space to think about something. And I think people who haven't allowed themselves the space, going back to the quote in this book, it's creativity is a product of time wasted. So I think the reality is the only real thought you can put into anything is through time and through wasting time. If you're constantly being interrupted, it interrupts your train of thought, so you can't genuinely think deeply about anything for a long period of time. And I think that's why Chris has been able to write a book about it. I think that's why he can come on here having no prep and not seen the questions from us beforehand and speak so eloquently about it, is because he spends time and he dedicates time to think about these things without being interrupted by social media because he's from a generation that is detached from it.
I completely agree. And I think that we should definitely pick up with Chris in future episodes. If you would like to see that, send us in a tweet. I think it's really interesting. And we were speaking before, it'd be nice to get someone that is someone that's slightly younger than us that's solely on... someone that's immersed themselves in social media and loves it. It'd be great for them to have a conversation, wouldn't it?
Yeah, moving forward with guests, for you guys listening, obviously we had Chris on, we'd like to have one of you guys on who feels like they can come on. From a lot of this podcast has been us speaking about a generation that we're just above, and we'd love to get a representative from that generation who feels they can speak on behalf of a majority and say, well, this is me speaking as a person who's grown up with social media, and this is how I think it's benefited me as a person. This is how I think it's brought together my generation, and just kind of play devil's advocate and oppose a lot of the things that we're saying, because they're not coming from a place of like hatred for social media from us. They're coming from a place of genuine naivety of having not grown up with these things. So if there's anyone who does feel strongly and feels like they can come on and add a different opinion, we'd love you to tweet us and let us know, and hopefully we can get someone on.
I did find Well, whilst you were saying that, I think maybe we can end on this. I've Googled whether social media is addictive, and there's a lot of different conflicting opinions. And I think this one, it's called LifeWire.com, and they say that there's no official medical recognition of social networking being as an addiction, like a disease or a disorder. However, there's a cluster of behaviors associated with heavier excessive use of social media that's become the subject of discussion and research. So I think that at the moment, it's just still quite new. I think that in 10 years, people might look back on social media and say, actually, that was an addictive, no, I don't know if illness or disorder, but it's just really interesting, isn't it? But I think good place to end.
Mm-hmm,
I think that a lot of things were covered by Chris. And as Brad said, if that spurred any thought of your own, do send us in a tweet at How Little We Know. Next episode coming out is going to be something slightly different. But I think that in the future, we will get Chris on again, won't we?
Definitely, yeah. And we hope you enjoyed having him on. And hopefully, again, as ever, it's spurred conversation amongst you. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for the continued support. It's been insane. I don't know if you saw the tweet, you guys who follow us, but we actually had, I think, some 100,000 downloads on the first two episodes, which first is just episodes. Ridiculous. Thank you for listening to us ramble on. Thank you. Should we thank the people who help us make this?
Yes. So we've got Dean Sherwood here behind the camera. We've got Joe, who's standing in my hallway. Your mum?
Yes, my mum, Mother Simpson, who is the person that I speak to a lot about these things as well. So big up my mum,
Producer Simpson.
Yeah.
Massive thank you also to Chris. Obviously, all of his links and stuff will be on our Twitter page and wherever else on the Entel website. Thanks to Entel. We're not with them today physically, but we're hoping to be there next time.
We're with them in spirit.
Who else should we thank? I've got a Christmas tree. Thanks
to the Christmas tree.
Richmond Christmas Tree Farm, that's a seasonal thing. But thank you very much. Anyone else you want to thank?
There was a little dog in here called Larry earlier who made me smile. Thank you to Larry.
What have we got around us? And no, I think that's it.
Yeah, that's everyone.
Thanks, Apple, for an iPhone. I definitely wasn't given that. So maybe next time. Anyway, have a good one. Peace.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.